Look at the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Chaf, and this Mishnah is, in a sense, it's a continuation of what came before, but yet it's a little bit different, because until now we've been saying the following, that if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, and you want to save things from the house, so it divides up into different categories. Are you saving Sfarim? Let's say there's a Sefer Torah inside, or Tefillin. There's food stuff that you want to save. We're going to have a case of clothing that you want to save. And, you know, there are like two sides of the coin here. On the one hand, we want to be sort of lenient, allowing you to save what you have to save, either because it's Sfarim and we don't want to see Sfarim go up in fire and flame, or it's food that you need, clothing. You know, there's always an issue of Hefsed Mamon. So that's the tzad to be more lenient. And in fact, in the previous Mishnah, we learned that you could take it out into perhaps into a mavui that doesn't have really what a mavui should have on Shabbos. It doesn't have a lechi, or maybe it has only one lechi, not two lechis. So all this, we were a little bit lenient in order to allow saving something. But the flip side of the coin is that once you allow people to save things, they might get so involved in saving, they might forget it's Shabbos, and they might actually extinguish the fire. And that would be a meleches kibui. So it's funny how this entire perek of Kol Kisvei, which deals with saving stuff from a fire, is sort of walking on this tightrope, you know, on the top of the fence. You know, on the one hand, we want to be perhaps as lenient as we can for a whole bunch of different reasons, but on the other hand, we can't be too lenient because it might lead to a malach of kibui. And the latter concept is called Adam Bahul Al Mamona, that a person is so confused and he's so overwhelmed by the effort to save as much as he can in a fire situation that he might override the Shabbos. But generally speaking, as far as food is concerned, which is going to be the focal point, at least the ratio of this Mishnah, what we've seen until now is that you're allowed to save food that you need for three meals on Shabbos. Some of the opinion that it changes if you're midway through Shabbos, because then you don't need that much food for the balance of Shabbos. But the ceiling was three sudos. And here the Mishnah seems to take a different approach. And the Mishnah says, Matzilin Sal. So you've got this basket, this receptacle, Mole Kikros. And it's full of many, many loaves of bread. The Afalpi Sheyesh Bo Lemea Sudos. So there's a very large volume of bread in this basket. And you're allowed to save it from a dleika. So we're going way beyond the three sudos. So the Gemara is going to try to explain why. Then you have a case of Eagle Shel Tvela. Right? They used to take figs and they used to smash them and make a big kind of a cake out of out of these figs. And once again, it was very large and it could supply more than three sudos. And the third case, which is also more than three sudos, is chavish al yayin. So you have a whole barrel of wine, which will supply way more than three sudos worth of wine. So that's going to be part number one of this Mishnah, which the Gemara is going to take up. Why are we allowing you more than three sudos? Now we have part number two. The Omer, and the owner of the house is permitted to turn to others, liacherim, who are not house owners, and say to them, bo vatzilu lachem. In other words, he's basically saying, you know what, my food, my drink, it's hefker, I can't save it. You know, I did whatever I could, and the fire is raging, so you take whatever you want, and it's yours. And each person who gets this invite is allowed to come and take what he needs for Shabbos. And it would seem that if he comes with one large receptacle, he could fill up that receptacle with enough food that'll last him for who knows how long, way beyond Shabbos. Then the Mishnah says something very strange. V'imhayu pikhim, if these people who've gotten invited are smart, then osim imo cheshbon achar ha-Shabbos. What they're going to do is, they're going to send him a bill, and they're going to say, pay us as polim, we were working on your behalf, and they can collect that money. And there are a number of issues here. Well, if it's hefker, then they are collecting their own food. Why are they billing him as an employee? That doesn't make sense. So maybe he's really not mafker. I don't know. And the other issue that we have to take up here is, how can you charge someone for work that you did on Shabbos? That's called schar Shabbos. Normally, you know, we don't collect money for work that was done on Shabbos. So, as I say, this Mishnah is very challenging. Then the Mishnah goes on and asks the question, Leheichon matzilin, O son? You know, you've just given me a list of what you're allowed to save. And in a sense, there's massive amount of food here, way beyond Mazon Shalosh Sudos. Where am I allowed to take it? Obviously, you're not going to allow a person to take it out into Rosh Hashanah from his house. That would be a Malacha Dorais of Hotzah. Elo, what? You're going to take it into a courtyard. Okay, that's a chotzer. Now we have to ask the following question. You know, there's a chotzer that's raw, so to speak, and then there's a chotzer that's been tended to. And the difference is whether it has an eruv. So if you have many different household owners, homeowners, that share a common courtyard, then on a derabbanan level, you're not allowed to take from your house anything out into the chatzer, so unless it has an eruv to it. That's called eruv chatzeros. And even though on a doraisa level that's perfectly permissible, because the chatzer is surrounded on all sides by mechitzos, so on a Torah level it has the status of Rishus HaYachid, but nevertheless the Rabbanan said that since it's common area to many, many different families and households, therefore it looks like a Rishus HaRabim, we're going to require somehow that everyone sort of join together. And the partnership here expresses itself in, let's say, mazon. They take a certain amount of food, whether it's, a loaf of bread, and they deposit it in the house of one of them. That's called an Erev Chatzeros. Now the Mishnah addresses the question of Hatzola. What kind of a Chatzer are you... into which kind of a chatzar are you permitted to take whatever you're taking out of your house because of the fire? And the Tanakhama basically says, you know what? We're going to only allow you to take it out into a place where you're allowed to take it out. It's mutter betiltel because there was an eruv. And here the question begs, if there's an eruv here, so what was the Mishnah making this very dramatic statement? Oh, for the sake of Hatzolah, we're going to bend the law. You're not bending the law. At least Ben Becerra, the second opinion, says, af le'ena she'ena mo'arevis, meaning the chatzah doesn't have an eruv. And here, for the sake of mazon, that you should be allowed to take out your food, and some of this food you'll be eating, some of the food maybe your neighbors will be eating because you invite them to take the food. All right, that's all the covered Shabbos. So we want to bend the laws and go back to the original Doraisa law and allow you to take it into a chatzer because it has mechitzos around it. It's a Rishus HaYochid, even though it doesn't have an Eruv. And that makes sense. But according to Tanakama, you know, the question is asked here, what Graysa Gedila, what great favor have you given me? Where's the leniency here if you're requiring as a precondition that this chatzer have an eruv? And again, this might touch on the flip side of it all, that, bekoshi tiru, we really didn't want you to get involved, you know, in this very, very passionate moment, you know, when you're saving things from a fire, to start saving things and... and maybe you'll get so involved you'll forget it's Shabbos. So we're going to add restrictions here. We're going to say these are the following conditions that have to be met, and hopefully that'll keep you intellectually in control of yourself, and you'll realize that today is Shabbos, and I got to be very careful about what I'm allowed to do, what I'm not allowed to do. Now the Mishnah goes on and speaks about other items that you have in your house that you're allowed to save from the Dleika. If we're talking about food or Sfarim, you know, that's understood. And now the Mishnah expands the scope and it says, L'sham motzi kol klei tashmisha. Meaning, we can't just say to him, take out the food. You know, we want him to be able to eat this food during the balance of Shabbos. Well, how's he going to eat the food? Well, he's going to eat it with his hands. So what we're going to do is we're going to let him take out, I mean, a classic example would be cups for liquid, right? So how's he going to drink the liquid unless we allow him to save his drinking cups? And perhaps other kinds of kelim that he needs, which is called kol klei tashmisho. And whatever he needs in order to function properly. Let's say, for example, he may need a table. Now, a table he needs for eating. What about a bed for sleeping? So the Ran adds here that he's allowed to take out a bed for sleeping. Now, I'm not sure if that would apply only on Friday night or even on Shabbos by day. But we're now expanding Kovet Shabbos, and Kovet Shabbos means you have to live like a mensch on Shabbos. That means not just supplying yourself with food that you can eat, but also bed that you can sleep in. Now, what about clothing? Now, in the case of clothing, you and I would have said, why should we bend the law for clothing, unless it's just a monetary consideration, because if his clothing goes up in smoke, he's going to become a pauper. But as far as Shabbos is concerned, he has the clothing that he's wearing, that should be sufficient for Kovet Shabbos. No. The Mishnah goes ahead and expands the scope of what you're allowed to take out as far as Malbush is concerned. Lovesh kol mashiyachol lilbosh. You know what we're going to tell him? Take out as many articles of clothing as you can, but you have to wear them all, one on top of the other. And once again, we're imposing a restriction on him, lest he get too carried away. Imagine if we said to him carte blanche, he could save his entire wardrobe, you know, for the next, I don't know how long, he's going to be running back and forth, saving his wardrobe, and who knows what's going to happen if he might put out the fire. Otev kol mashiyachol latov. So the Mishnah allows him to put on hats, and maybe scarves, or all sorts of turbans that he wears on his head, and all this he's allowed to save from the fire. Now, I have a sefer here called the Sefer HaTruma, and it was published in Italy about 4 centuries ago, and it was published with a very, very important commentary called the Gedulei Truma. I was very excited to get a hold of this Sefer because the Gedulei Truma's name was Rav Azaria Fego. He was an Italian Jew. I don't come in contact with Azaria on a regular basis. So I'm a very proud owner of the Gedulei Truma first edition from Venice. And he writes...
Who wrote it?
The Sefer HaTrumas himself was a Rishon. I forget his name right now.
Oh, okay.
But in any event, in the Sefer HaTruma, he writes that in the case of clothing, because he's wearing one pair of clothing on top of the other, so he's not violating the Isur HaTzah. In the case of food, or for that matter, Sefer Torah,
right. There's
always the possibility that if he forgets himself, he might actually carry it into a Rishus HaRabim, let's say. So we have to worry about all possible scenarios. But in the case of clothing, since we're saying to him he's got to wear these clothing, he's not allowed to carry them, so therefore, he doesn't need a Chatzer Mureves, meaning even the Chachamim of Ben Becerra, who restrict him and say you're only allowed to save the food into a chatzah that has an Eruv, here they're going to drop the requirement of an Eruv, even the Chachamim of Ben Beseira, because since he's wearing these begadim derech malbush, that's not Hotzah. And I have a note here, in the name of Rabbi Kivega, he writes, Lefisa afla hotzi lemavui shedem afulosh, o afla shusarabim yitochin shemutar. That maybe we could take the Sefer HaTrumas even one step further, and not only allow wearing these begadim one on top of the other in a chatzah shenim murevis, maybe we can go as far as to say you can take it out even to Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because you're not carrying. It's derech malbush. However, not everybody agrees with that approach. Some say that it's not derech malbush to wear one on top of the other on top of the other. You know, if it's a cold day, maybe you need two sets of garments. But if it's if it's a warm day, for example, why? This is not the normal way you would dress up. And that leads us to the sheet of Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi Yossi is very strict. Rabbi Yossi says that you're allowed to wear clothing in order to save it from the dleika. But rak shmonasrei kelim. There are 18 specific begadim. The Gemara is going to go through the list that are normally worn on a weekday, but not more than these 18. In other words, since during the week it's not normal for a person, it's not regular for a person to wear these begadim beyond the 18, then it becomes a burden, and then it's something which would entail a chiyuv hotzah in event that he would take it out to Rosh Hashanah. And again, once we're afraid, Baal HaMamona, that he's so preoccupied with saving everything, he might forget it's Shabbos, he might even walk out into Rosh Hashanah and he violates an Isra Otzah if it's beyond these 18 begadim. Now the Mishnah wants to clarify the law in a case where he takes out begadim beyond what he needs, and can he take out only on one shot, meaning we'll give him one, in baseball we'd say one shot at the plate, or in basketball, maybe we'll give you one shot towards the loop. But what happens if he wants to go back a second time? And here the Tanakhama says the following. Chozer v'lovesh u'motzi. What he's allowed to do is take out whatever he can take out in one fell swoop, wearing whatever he can, one on top of the other. Then he's going to allow to go back in and again wear the begadim one on top of the other. And I have doubts if Rabbi Yossi would agree with this, because Rabbi Yossi is afraid that, you might violate Meleches Hotzah. So I don't know exactly how restricted Rabbi Yossi would be, but the Tanakhama certainly here is more lenient. And once again, because in the case of Begadim, since he's wearing the Begadim, it's less of a problem. Now, if we turn back the clock to the discussion that we had about food stuff, so then, in the case of food, if he keeps going back inside to get more and more food out, we have to be worried that he might forget himself and extinguish the fire. But in the case of begadim, since they limit it to derech malbush, that's going to keep him aware of the fact that he shouldn't get carried away with himself, that he's only allowed to wear the begadim, not to carry the begadim. You can't tie him up in a bundle and carry the bundle out. Now, Rashi Shita here is that the permission, the leniency of going back in a second time, etc., with begadim, is only according to the Tanakhama. The Ritva disagrees, and he says the Mishnah doesn't seem to say that. The Mishnah, just without mentioning Rabbi Yossi, seems to say mistoma, that you're allowed to go back in and take out begadim, which implies that Rabbi Yossi never disagreed in that case, although again he has a limit to which begadim you're allowed to carry. I mean, you're allowed to wear, I should say. But as far as going back in and out, we never found that Rabbi Yossi disagreed. However, again, Rashi seems to say that this leniency at the end of the Mishnah has to be attributed to the Tanakama, Rabbi Yossi be Machmir, since Rabbi Yossi was the one who said that he's only allowed to wear 18 bgadim. It makes sense that he would also limit it and say that you're only allowed to go in once and take and wear these 18 bgadim. So that's an issue that is amongst the Rishonim. Now we start the Gemara.
can I just ask one question?
Sure, please.
I've never understood this in this whole sugya. What the whole logic here is that you're going to go back in and you might put out the fire, correct?
Right.
Isn't that the underlying logic? So what type of fire were they dealing with that would not be pikuach nefesh, that could injure your clothes or burn up your clothes or your food?
Well, I guess there's no one in the house. You're right, Ira. If someone's in the house...
The whole house, but that's still not pikuach nefesh. In those days, fires could take out an entire town. They didn't have... So it's funny, because usually the Gemara, like, you know what I mean? Dafka, in our days, it would make even more sense. But in the days of the Gemara, fires were unbelievably serious. And they're dealing with a fire. I've never understood the underlying logic to this whole...
Right, you have to know what the circumstance. I mean, there's no question if there's a pikuach nefesh element, if that fire might spread, and who knows what could happen.
How can it not spread? How can it not spread if it's on Shabbos and no one's putting it out?
I guess it's surrounded by cement or by walls, or it's enclosed in such a way that the fire can't spread. For sure. I mean, if there's a 1% chance that the fire would spread, I mean, then we're not right. We're not talking about that.
Okay,
let's see the Gemara. The Gemara says, "Vatani le reisha shalosh seudos v'sulo." Right, in the previous Mishnah, back on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, in between there was a long, long agadita. The Mishnah said that you're only allowed to save 3 sudos. Omrav huna lo kasha, kan bebola hatzil, kan bebola kapel. If you have one basket and it's full of lots and lots of food, you're not going to run around and take many, many different baskets and expand your involvement. You're just taking out one basket, one barrel. That's called bala hatzil. And that's mutter. We don't have to care how much of a volume of food is inside that one utensil, that one receptacle, that one barrel. And just to quote the words of Rabbeinu Tam here, Kevan shu kli echad, since it's one utensil, Omrim shemitok shematzil bo mozan shal sus, he's allowed to save 3 sudos. So instead of telling him to empty the barrel and take out the 3 sudos, which is only going to delay the whole process of saving, yochal ha'atzil koma shemitokho, afim yesh bo mozan mea sudos. So there's always this element of tircha that plays a role. This variable, how much do we want him to get involved with doing this and doing that? You know, start emptying out the barrels and make sure we'll count out 3 sudas. You know, it's a fire. But in Bola Lakapil, the first Mishnah is talking about Bola Kapil. He starts gathering together food, and he's taking out in this sal, in that sal, in that sal. So here we're going to cap it at 3 seudos. If he's going through this entire tircha with one kli and another kli and a third kli and so forth and so on, you know what we're going to say to him? The maximum volume allowed to save is up to 3 seudos. So bala hatzil, this is just a summary of what we learned. If he's coming with one sal, one basket, matzil's kulam. He can take anything that's inside the basket. He doesn't have to be stingy. He may end up with muzzle for 100 sudas. But Bola Kapel, now he's trying to gather together in different baskets and take out one basket or after another of one suda, another suda, another suda. Then we're going to cap it. Enema Kapel, muzzle on Sholosh sudos. And now the Gemara wants to offer an alternative approach. Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda Marav Idi V'idi V'Bola Kapel. both Mishnayos are talking about a case where he's got multiple utensils. He's gathering together his food in many, many different utensils. But nevertheless, velokash. Kan, in our Mishnah here that we're learning here, li'osa chotzer, we're allowing him to take many different kalim, but only into the chotzer that's right outside of the house. It's contiguous, it's a courtyard that's contiguous to the house that's going up in flames. And here we're going to let him take out even more than shalosh sudos. Why? Because he's staying locally in this chotzer. But Kan, the first Mishnah, where we limited it and restricted it to a cap of 3 sudos, that's l'chotzer acheres. In other words, he wants to go through this chotzer and then pass through this courtyard and take it to a second courtyard. And here we're going to say only shalosh sudos and not more. So I just want to read to you a comment here of the Rishonim. They say, starting with Rashi and many others, that once he's going to a second chotzer, is kevin shehu marbe b'tircha. So this clearly introduces another element. We've touched on it, but here it's, you know, right center, and that is tircha. We want to limit the amount of work that he's doing. Today is still Shabbos, and we wanted to get something out of the Shabbos. So for him to take it into one chotzer, and then take all these different kalim into a second chotzer, that's already tircha meruba. That's already an excessive amount of work. As long as he's taking whatever he needs to take into one chotzer, which is right outside of his house, then the sky's the limit. It's unlimited. Now the Taz makes a comment in Shulchan Aruch Siman Shin Lamed Dalid, and he says, "Kevin sheyesh b'kach tircha yisera, hu yoseh tarut." So it's not just that we're trying to give him more of an experience of Shabbos and limiting the amount of schlep and work that he's putting in. No, no, no. There's a relationship between two variables. They work in tandem. The more tirda he has, in other words, you're extending the amount of time that it takes him till he finishes this process of hotzah, of hatzah. So he goes in, takes it into one chutz, and now he takes it into the other chutz, and now he wants to go back in. Because again, the Gemara now, according to Rav Abba, is not limiting how much food he's taking out. But you're expanding the tircha when you allow him to take it from one chutz to the other. In the meantime, what you're doing is you're expanding the time that he's involved in Hatzol, and at some point, he may forget, and either forgets in Shabbos, or he thinks that you're allowed to extinguish the fire. But as long as we limit the tircha, and he's only allowed to take these baskets of food into the chatzer, one chatzer, he's not considered tarud. So we're saying now that tircha generates tirda. Again, the two words are very similar. There's tircha and there's tirda. And tirda means shema yishkach. Okay. Now we have a Tosfos, Dibur Maskil Idi. So again, just to summarize the main point of that Tosfos, which is the top Tosfos here on Kuf Chav, he quotes one of the Bali Atos, Rabbeinu Parat, that according to Rav, because keep in mind, this statement is the second alternative interpretation is Rabbi Abba attributed to Rav. Bechatz acheres also litol yosem mishalosh sudos. This is a radical chiddush. We thought that taking it into a second chatz is completely prohibited under all circumstances. Oh, no, no, no. The difference between the first chatzer and the second is that where the first chatzer is unlimited in volume of food, the second is mutter, but with a limited volume, and that caps it off as shalosh sudos. So when we go back to the original Mishnah that restricts it to gimel sudos, that's talking about a case where he's carrying it from the first chatzer into the second chatzer. So he comes out with the following. If we go back to Rav Huna for a moment, the first answer, and he was distinguishing between one kli, one utensil, and many utensils. So it would be that according to Rav Huna, in a case of chatzar acheres, he's allowed to take with one kli as much as he likes. There's no limit in volume into the second chatzar. Why? Because it's one kli. And Rav Huna never accepted a distinction between the first chatzar and the second chatzar. So according to Rav Huna, there's an automatic matir, meaning an absolute unconditional leniency in the case of one kli, which allows him to go into the second chatzar with one kli that has in it a massive volume of food. However, if we're going according to Rabbi Abba in the name of Rav, then the main factor is, are you carrying it into one chatzar or another chatzar? And now the reconciliation of the two Mishnayos is clear, that according to Rav, in the second chatzar, we're going to limit you to three sudos. In the first chatzar, we're going to allow you to take as many sudos, in as many kelim as you like. Because according to Rav, the difference between the first mission and the second mission is chatzar zu or chatzar acheres. Boy Rav Huna Berei Rav Yeshua Peresh Taloso Taliso Vekipel V'niach Vekipel V'niach Mai. What happens if he gathers together the food, but he gathers them all in one, in this case, talis, meaning in one bundle. So he's not carrying out multiple bundles, but on the other hand, he is gathering together food from here, food from there, and from here. So there's a high level of tircha. So we have a high level of tircha, which we said tircha leads to tirda. And on the other hand, we have one kli. So he's going to, the actual hotzah, when he takes it out of his house, is with one receptacle. My. And now, Rav Huna gives us the two tzadei asafek. Number one, kibbalah hatzil dami. In other words, this is like a person who's doing atzola one time with one kli that has many, many different, a large volume of food in it. Here also, it's one kli. And he's taking it out in one fell swoop. And even though there's the extra element of tircha here, because he has to gather them together, nevertheless, we're going to allow him to take it out in one kli. And that means he can take out even more than shalosh sudos, because it's one kli. And this is probably, I don't know, I shouldn't say this. This is a mistake. I'm about to make a mistake here and say this is the same Rav Huna. It's really not the same Rav Huna, because the first Rav Huna is the original Rav Huna, who is the Rosh Hashiva. Now we have Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua. That's a different Rav Huna. But honestly, just on a conceptual level, even if it's a different Rav Huna, it's connected to the first Rav Huna. Because again, according to the first Rav Huna, the main thrust that will determine how much he's allowed to take is how many kelim he's using. And therefore, the first tzad here in Rav Huna, Berei Rav Yeshua, Safek, going on the line of reasoning of Rav Huna, that it all depends upon what you're taking out. Are you taking out multiple kelim or one keli? So he thinks, Bola Hatzil Dami. It's Mamish like taking as much as he wants to take, that's all in one keli. Oh, what should we say? No. Kibbala Kapil Dami. We want to minimize his tircha. And if he's gathering it together from different places, then basically it's really, as far as the measurement of tircha is concerned, it's like many different kelim. Because he went here and he went there and he went there. Again, I don't mean literally that all these different foodstuffs are in different kelim. I don't know if you have to say that. They may be, in one table, another table, or one refrigerator, another refrigerator. It wouldn't matter to me. But since he's got to gather them together, he's really doing many different otzos. At the end of the day, he only does one otzah because he puts them all in one keli. Mm-hmm. And Rav Huna just threw out this question in front of the scholars. And the Gemara itself is going to quote a statement of Rava to try to determine what the halacha would be in that scenario where he gathers it together and puts it into one keli. Midi Amar Rava. So we have a statement of Rava. Now it's interesting, the Bach, if you'll notice it, has a slightly different girsa here. He has Toshma di Amar Rava. That makes it a little clearer. In any event, Rava is going to go back to the Braisa, back at Daf Kufiyut Zion. The Braisa has a long discussion there about a case where somebody had a barrel of wine, and it was up on the roof, and it broke. And now, the wine is spilling out at a very fast pace from this broken barrel. And he's about to lose all his yayin. And the Braisa allows him, again it's quite a bit of tircha, to take a kli. Right now we'll assume it's just one kli, and to place it, located in such a way that the wine that's dripping out, that's falling out of this broken barrel, will fall into that kli. And Atye Rav Shizbi l'Rav Chizda. Now, we don't know exactly yet, for that we have to be patient, what exactly was the mistake that Rav Shizbi made when he gave a ruling to Rav Chizda, Vidarash, and he presented to Rav Chizda that although he's allowed to bring a utensil, a receptacle, to save the wine that's flowing out of the barrel, but that's only Bilvad Shelo Yovi Klishu Machzik Yoser Mishalosh Seudos. And the way Rav Shizbi presented it to Rav Chizda, and apparently Rav Chizda accepted it, and again, it's all a big mistake, says Rava, but right now, that's what they believed, was the halacha, that you are limited here to Mazon Shalosh Seudos. Now, what that means is that, I guess, every Seuda requires a certain volume of wine. It might fluctuate from family to family, number of members of the household, those who are above the age of drinking, you know, that are allowed to have wine, whatever it might be. But we're being very strict, and we're not allowing saving from this barrel more than Shalosh Seudos. And we'll see why as we go along. Now, Rava says that this was a mistake, and you're allowed to save from this barrel of wine. You take it a gigantic kli, I don't care what the size of it, even though you're going to save a lot more wine than three sudos. And it may take a long time until you finally achieve your goal. In other words, the crack in the barrel and the wine that's coming out of that crack might be coming very slowly. What we call tipin tipin. You know, one drop at a time. And yet, Rava allowed, you know, getting involved in this long process of saving every last drop of wine that's coming out of the barrel. And he's only allowed to bring one kli, but nevertheless, the Gemara thinks that as far as the, as far as the involvement is concerned, there's a major involvement here in a case where the wine is coming down very slowly. You know, he's going to have to move the barrel and situate it in such a way. It's a whole involvement, a whole geschichte here. So the Gemara wants to make an analogy here between Rava's leniency in the case of the barrel that broke and the wine is spilling slowly, and he's allowed to save as much wine as he wants, way beyond Shalosh Seudos, to the case here where there's a fire and he's going in to save his food stuff, and the question is, can he gather lots and lots of food into one kli? And even though, again, it's a long, drawn-out process of involvement, nevertheless, Kibbalah Hatzil Dami V'Shapir Dami. You see, in Rava's case, in the barrel, he allowed more than Mazon Shalosh Seudos Vatzola. And here too, in the case of the Dleika, he's going to allow more than Shalosh Seudos of Hatzola. Why? Because he's taking it out in one barrel. So I just want to quote the Marsha here. The Marsha asks the following question. Harei ena nidon kan shetoreach v'yosef kama pa'om and v'yoso kli. The case that we're dealing with, which was the suffix of Rav Huna, he's involved in a great deal of tircha, because he has to go time after time in order to gather from here and there and elsewhere and put it into one kli. That's not similar to the case of Chavis, where he brings one kli, and he saves all the wine in one kli. Now, even though I grant you that the wine is dripping slowly, but nevertheless, in terms of the physical expanding, so that it's very limited, because he's only being toreach for one barrel. You know, he's going to get it one barrel to save the wine from the other barrel. And therefore, we could say, let him go and save all the Muslim Shalosh Sudos, way beyond the Muslim Shalosh Sudos, as much of a volume as he wants. Why? Because he's not doing an expanded tircha, as opposed to the case that we have a fire and he's running around here, there, and elsewhere. And many times he's going to look here and look there until he finally gathers it all together in one kli. I mean, you're really expanding or increasing his tircha level. And we said before that also impacts on his tirdo level. And if there's a tzad to say they're running around and gathering together all the food is called lekapel, bol lekapel, which we said is prohibited. So what can you prove from the case of the barrel? So the answer that is given to the Marsha's kasha is the following. And I'm not sure if I'm fully on board here. He says, "Mimashem muta lilkot yayin shenishbach min achovis miat maat af kishaoches esakli biyado." In other words, it's not the way we understood it, that he just finds a landing. You know what I mean? He's got a scaffold, you know, somewhere he puts the kli and that's it. You know, he goes away, he goes home. No. He's actually holding the kli in his hand, and one by one drops are falling into the kli. And now he's going to have to move the kli around in order to make sure that, you know, because not all the drops fall in a uniform flow. So that's called a tircha yisera. That's a big tircha. And it's similar to the case where he has to be toreach to collect many different, you know, times, you know, this effort, that effort, from here, there, and elsewhere, to put it all into one sah. Okay. Amale, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak l'Rava. Now, you told me, Rava, that Rav Shizbi made a mistake, and he actually fooled Rav Chizda, who went along with him. Aita Usa, what's his mistake? So Rava said, "Dikatani, we have a brisa that says ubilvad shelo yavi kli acher v'yilkot." The brisa says that if the flow of yayin is a stream flowing into the kli, that's mutter. But let's say that he wants to, do a better job, one up it. And what he wants to do is he wants to bring another kli, and he wants to be kolate the kiluach hayayin shenishbach min hachavis min ha'avir, which, if I understand correctly, what that means is that he wants to take another kli and try to receive the yayin in the kli even before the yayin falls onto the floor. I don't mean the floor literally, because he's trying to catch it before it falls on the floor, but you know what I mean? Even before the stream will bring it towards the floor. And it would seem that lo yavi od kliacher v'yitzaref. Okay, now we get to a different scenario, a different kind of way of saving the yayin from the chavis that's tripping out, and that's called kli acher v'yitzaref, that he takes a kli and he attaches it to the barrel, the broken barrel. And what that means is, I'll read to you the beer. He says, "Kedei sheyizov hayayin hanishpach min hachovis al hagag min hagag lekli." Okay, so what's happening here? It seems that, if I understand correctly, this man is trying to cover his bases. He's running around. He doesn't want to lose the wine in the barrel. He tries to figure out, what can he do? Let's try everything. You know, it's like, hitting in all directions, shooting in all directions. So what does he do? He wants to take a second kli, and he wants to try to get the wine and catch it before it drips down, before the stream hits towards the bottom. Or, in addition, maybe he takes another kli, and he wants to catch it on the gag, meaning as soon as it rolls off on the roof, even before it starts going downhill, he wants to catch it and hold on to a kli so that he tips over the kli in a way that the yayin will flow on the roof itself into the kli. Anyway, there are a bunch of different possible scenarios, you know, different vaccines that you can come up with to try to save the yayin. So and this is what Rava wants to point out here. It's counterintuitive, says Rava. No, this Brisa is being more lenient. Why? Because the Brisa is implying that Kli Acher Hu Delo Aval Bahu Mona Kamen Deboi Matzil. Meaning, the way that Rav Shizbi, shall I say, misunderstood, according to Rava's accusation, this halacha of Hatzolas Hayayim in Achavis, is he tried to say that Bilvash lo yavi klishu machzik yosem mishalosh sudos, that we have to be very, very machmir, and we have to put the cap on three sudos of yayin. What led him to that conclusion? Because the Brisa says, well, he can't bring another kli here, he can't be another kli here. Says Rava, Adarabba, everything is the opposite. You're misunderstanding the Brisa. The Brisa wants to insist that we're only going to allow Tircha with one Kli. And even though you brilliantly came up with all sorts of permutations and ways in which you can solve your problem and minimize your damage by bringing a Kli here and a Kli there, that's prohibited. But if you can, you know, salvage the wine in one kli, and that's all you're doing is a tircha for one kli, so then we're going to allow you to save in that kli as much wine as you possibly can, even if it's more than shalosh sudos. So let's see if I can explain the machlokas here between, on the one hand, Rav Chisda and Rav Shizbi, and on the other hand, Rava. He says the following: Taman shall Rav Chisda Rav Shizbi also lahatzil yayin af b'kli echad if it's yoser b'mozen shol sudos. We're going to cap it. You can only save yayin up to three sudos. Why? Because when the Brisa says ubilvad shelo yavi kli acher, that he can't take another kli, they understood that the implication is that he shouldn't take a kli that holds more than three sudos worth of yayin. So even though the Brisa used the word kli acher, which means that the prohibition is only if you add another kli into the arrangement, but they understood it more liberally, and what that meant was that later on the Brisa is going to allow you, you know, to feed your guests if you want to make, you know, save wine and for guests, and in such a case where you have guests. they can allow you to even introduce many, many kelim. So the Brice wanted to tell you that if you don't have any guests, then you're only allowed to use one keli. But really what the Brice wanted to say was that not that there's no limit to how much you can save in one keli. The limit is shalosh sudos. You have no guests coming. If you have no guests coming, all you need is to carry you through Shabbos. That's what we're going to allow you to do for this Tirchon Shabbos. Rava disagrees. He's of the opinion that if there was an Isur to bring a kli that is so large that it'll collect more than three sudas worth of yayin, then that's a chiddush gadol. And somewhere it should have appeared in the Braisa. Ilu adin amuva b'seifa sheyochel hatzel avura orchim yoser. The seifa is less of a chiddush. That if you have guests to feed, then you know we expand the amount of wine you need for shalosh sudas. That's not a big chiddush. A big chiddush would be that he's not allowed to save more than shalosh sudas if he doesn't have guests. And that's not mentioned in the Braisa. And therefore, we're going to learn the Braisa, says Rava, that although you're not allowed to take more than one keli, but within one keli, the sky's the limit. You can save as much wine as you want. Now, let's get back to the Mishnah about Igul Shel Dvela. And the Mishnah went ahead and said, you're allowed to invite others to save whatever they want to save from the Dleika. And if they were very smart, they'll send you a bill for the Schiras, for the work that they did. So the Gemara thinks that what does it mean, pikhim? That pikhim is not, we're not talking about IQ or some sort of intuitive extra sense of, but we're talking about pikhim means in the halachic sense, that they are experts in dini momenos. In other words, they know the law, they learned the bavis, they learned some of choshen mishpat. They understand that the food, they were invited to take the food, that's hefker. And now they can strike up a deal. They can be zoche in the food as hefker, even though the circumstances were such that the Baal, he wasn't really interested in making all his food hefker. He only did so because there was no other option to save more than shalosh sudos. So they are experts, and they know. Just 1 second, let me just get the cheshbon. They know that this is hefker. Again, if we were learning closely in Mishpah, we'd have to actually analyze this. Is this really hefker? Hefker has to come from a sincere desire on one decision on one person's part to give up on his ownership. That's hardly the case here. But nevertheless, even in such a case, which is called hefker machmas ones, havi hefker. And these are the pikhim. Yeah, so cheshbon mai avidite. So what exactly is the cheshbon here that these scholars are making? Mefkera kazachu. They own this mazon. It's theirs. He invited them to take the mazon and save it, and save it from the dleika. And if the pikhim are those who are taking the food for themselves, and if they're such great scholars, why would they, after Shabbos, deliver all the food and say, well, pay me schirus? Better than that. They can pocket all these food. You know, let's say there are barrels and barrels of wine, maybe herring. Imagine what a killing they could make on the market. So what kind of scholars would decide that they're going to send a bill to the owner of the house for the work that they did, you know, a measly $5 an hour, I don't know what, when they can actually pocket the entire thing because they know that hefker machmas ones is hefker. Rav Chisda midas chasinus shanukan. The word pikhin here should be substituted or translated as chasidim, meaning, in truth, they have the rights to take these, all the food that they save for themselves, and pocket it, market it, but they want to go, me'aver l'midas hadin, lifnim mishrus hadin, they want to give up on what's really rightfully theirs. They're such chasidim, they realize that have any interest in being mafkir to them. I mean, he needs these supplies for whatever reason, not for one Shabbos, but he needs this food. So then, you know what they're going to do, these chassidim? They're not going to take any of the food for themselves. They're going to send it back to the Baalim. But they do have a right, in the context of that barter exchange, to collect schirus. I mean, why not? Again, forgetting about the issue of schar Shabbos, but in and of itself, they, on a legal basis, have a right. They actually have a right. Let's say the sum total value of the mazon is 1,000, and they, b'midas chassidus u'fnimishus hadin, are giving back $1,000 worth of merchandise. At least give them a $25, you know, service charge. Pay them for the work that they did. Now, before we go on in the sugya, when the Gemara now is going to raise the issue of Schar Shabbos, you know, he's talking about these pious guys, they're such chassidim, and they're charging you for work that they did on Shabbos. That's going to be the next part of the sugya. Let's raise a different question. This is the Ran's question. What's the status of food, or for that matter, any object of value, that's about to go up in smoke? He's not allowed to save this food above and beyond Shalosh Sudos. That's what we call Zuto Shalyam. I mean, here we have to know, I learned this when I was in fourth grade, I don't know if you did also, Ira. Right. You went to Eitz Chaim, right?
No, Associated.
Oh, you went to Associated. So I don't know, if an Associated, yeah. did they start with Eilu Metzias?
We started... That's the
old time tradition. Even though I'll tell you, Ira, I went to a very modern school, probably the same as Associated in terms of its level. But the rabbis were very old time European rabbis.
That's what we had.
Ah, so they had the minhag of starting with Eilu Metzias. That's what they did back in the old Lithuania.
You know what? Now that I think about it, I bet we did do that.
Yeah. So one of the big sugyas at the very beginning of Eilu Metzias is that if you find something that's absolutely lost for anyone, it's at the bottom of the sea, no one has even a havamina that they can hire sea divers and save it, that's hefker. You know, there's no hashavas aved.
Right.
So the Ran is bothered here because our Gemara is vacillating whether or not this is called hefker machmas ones, so it's not hefker, it's, you know, he really didn't want to be mafkir. Forget it, says the Ran, it's irrelevant. It's hefker by definition. It's hefker because it's zuto shalyam. You know, it's not something that anybody can save, and that's the Gemara at the beginning of Bav Metzia. So it's very interesting because if you take a look at the language of the Gemara says me'afkera kazachu. You see those two words. So it could be that Mefkeru Kazachu should be reinterpreted if you take it literally. Mefkeru Kazachu doesn't mean that he himself was mafkir by inviting them to take the food, but that in and of itself it's hefker. Objectively it's hefker because it's zuto shalyam. And he quotes here the Piskei Rid, that's a little bit after the Ran. And he writes, Miloshen HaGemara Mefkeru Kazochi Mashma Shebe'emes Af Below Diburo Shel Balabais. Even if the Balabais did not invite them to take whatever they could, it's considered Hefker. V'yecholim Lovo Latzilo. So why did the Mishnah make a big deal about Omer Lacherim Bo Vatzilu? The Mishnah wanted to teach us that the Balabais is allowed to invite others to come and take from his house, even though, now here's a little bit of a weak point of the Piskei Arid, but I'll just tell you what the Piskei Arid says. The Chiddush is that he knows that these people are pious people, and because of their fear of God, they're going to return all this food to him, and the Heter Atzolo was only Shalosh Sudos. And in effect, he's really doing a... a harama, I call it a subterfuge, I don't know how to call it in English, harama, in which he's really circumventing the law. He's going to invite these people to come in. They're going to actually give back his food because they're very God-fearing people. And in such a way, he saved more than three sudos. He's really just he's finding a loophole. And he says, Hetzilu lachem. Now, the Piskei Arit says that since he says the word lachem, then he's indicating that, you know, fellas, you don't have to be such great chassidim. You know, leave your Yerushalayim outside the door. It's lachem. Lachem means it's yours. And under those circumstances, even though maybe in his subconscious mind he thinks and he knows and he realizes that they will return the food to him, nevertheless it's mutter. Why? Because he didn't say, Hetzilu imi. If he would have said the word imi, with me, save with me, then he would have conveyed the message by implication that they should return the food to him. And that's already a subterfuge. But since he says the word atzilu lachem, therefore it's mutter. But again, just to summarize, we really have two approaches here to this Gemara. We have the Ran's approach to the Piskei Arit. The Ran is approaching this, that he was mafkir the nechassim. And these were pikchum who understood that hefker machmas ones is still a valid hefker. And if the Ran gets himself caught up with an immovable mover here, because we have halacha of zuto shel yam, and this is a classic zuto shel yam, so he doesn't have to be mafkir. And we have the Tosfos Rid who reinterprets the Gemara, and he's closer to simple pshat, may have kerek hazoch, who means it's zuto shel yam. And the heter here in the Mishnah is that even though he's inviting others, and he knows very well that their, you know, super pious religious sense is going to, they're going to give back the food to him, nevertheless, we're going to allow it. Omar Rava Chasidi, you are telling me, Rav Chisda, that our Mishnah is addressing itself to Chasidim? Agra de Shabsa Shokli? What kind of Chasidim are you dealing with? I don't know of any Chasidim that would allow collecting money for work that they do on Shabbos. And this is a sugya, not here in Masechta Shabbos, but in Ksubis. Asur litol schar al molocha nasis b'Shabbos. And it's gzera mishum mekach u'memkar, right? Including in business deals, in the expanded sense, is that you're not allowed to take money for work that you do on Shabbos. Now, this case is a little bit more sophisticated. This is really not being paid for malacha that was done on Shabbos. Malacha that was done on Shabbos means that if we, you and I, enter into a contractual agreement that you do X and I'll pay you Y, that's asur on Shabbos. Because you're doing this work based on a contractual obligation that I've taken upon myself to pay you for that work on Shabbos. Here, the man was mafkir his food, they were zochim in a hefker, and yet he wants to be mavater on what he gave, on what he collected and what he acquired. What he acquired, kedasu kedin. And now he says to the guy, look, we don't have any contractual agreement in which you entered into a contract. You didn't know that the fire was going to break out and you're going to pay me for my work. But you know what? I have, $1,000 worth of merchandise of yours, which is really technically mine. I'm going to give it over to you. You know, give me some level of compensation for the work that I did. And he's allowed to ask for that. So it's not a din that Pa'ula Shabbos generates an Isur Schar. No, that's not the halacha. The halacha is that to establish a financial contractual obligation to pay a person for work that he's going to do on Shabbos, that's prohibited. Because that's really Mekach U'Memkar. But here we're not dealing with Mekach U'Memkar. Not by a long stretch. Here we're talking about a case where he makes a deal. I'm going to be a great chassid. I'm going to bend over backwards and I'm going to give you back all this mazon. So chach, at least pay me for some, you know, some nominal fee for the work that I did. And that would be certainly mut. Says the Ritva, Enochinami. That's not what Rava has in mind. Rava has in mind that a chassid will expand the definition of schar Shabbos. He will not accept payment for any work that he did on Shabbos, period. Whether it was contractual up front, meaning before he did the pu'ula, or even post facto, if he did the pu'ula, he will refuse to be paid even for the amal guf, even for the work, the physical work that he labored, that he did, his sweat and toil, because he's getting paid for work that he did on Shabbos. Elom a Rava, therefore Rava wants to interpret the Mishnah in a different way. Hacha biyarei shamayim askinon. Here the Mishnah is talking about a person who's a God-fearing person. He's not a chassid. You know, a chassid would never even, you know, go within a million miles of proximity to getting paid for work on Shabbos. He's a yirei shamayim, not a chassid. V'lo nichalei d'lishanei me'acherim. Right, we have a principle called sonei matonis yichya. So he's a yirei shamayim. He doesn't want to benefit from someone else. So he, you know, he's going to be zochem in a hefker because this guy never has a fire. That he doesn't want to do. That's called lishanei me'acherim. And he knows that the person Nebuch who has his fire had no interest in being mafkir as nechassim. You know, sometimes I remember when I left Lander College on my way back to America, on my way back to Israel after this, you know, I was in Canada for 2 years, then I was at Lander for 2 years. So when I finished at Lander, I had a lot of sfarim. I made a cheshbon that I could take the sfarim to a post office and send them. That would cost me more than buying the sfarim in Israel. So I was mafkir. I was mafkir all my. You know, today I'm a little bit sorry I did so because there was some rare sfarim there that I still haven't gotten my hands on here in Israel. But anyway, so a yirei shamayim doesn't want to take advantage of a situation where a person never had to be mafkir's nechassim. You know, he was packing out. Or in this case, he had a fire. However, b'chinam nami lo nichalei lilitrich. He's not such a chassid that he should do all this work on behalf of someone else and give him the, you know, the food that's worth a lot and it's really technically his. He doesn't have to give up on it, but he doesn't want to do that work for free, and therefore he has a right within the perspective of Yirei Shamayim to be paid for his work. If he was a chassid, then he wouldn't want to get any benefit from Shabbos. That would be a Shabbos issue. But in terms of getting benefit from Yenom, from another human being, well, I put that work in, that effort in, magili, as we say here in Israel. You know, I deserve to be paid for that. That's not being nishani me'acherim. So the Mishnah says that pikhim osim imo cheshmin. So what does that mean? Pikhim osim min imo cheshbin. It doesn't mean that the pikhim bidin are taking that which is really theirs, right? Otherwise, the Mishnah should have said ya'akvu masha yatzilu b'liatzman. In other words, they should hold on to the food because it was hefker. So that's not what we're saying about pikhim. Hachikomer, this is the way we interpret it. Im ha'yirei shamayim, if these pikhim were God-fearing Jews, and they know the laws of Shabbos, diyodi ki hai gavna. They understand that in this case it's not schar Shabbos. Why? Because it was never, as we said earlier, a contractual agreement before Shabbos that they would be in his employment to work and save min adleika on his behalf, and will pay you such and such. So that's not called Schar Shabbos. It's therefore Osim Imo Cheshbin Liachar Shabbos. After Shabbos is over, then they can say, look, technically, we have rights to the whole kit and caboodle, but we're Yirei Shamayim, we don't want to benefit from the fact that you were in such bad straits that you had to allow us to take your hefker. So we'll give it back to you. But we have a right to get paid for that. Why? Because we are Pikhim. And Pikhim know the laws of Shabbos. And this is not a violation of Schar Shabbos. Let's go on. The Mishnah says, Lehechan Matzilon, Esamozen Shal Tzio, the Omer Lachirim Bo Vatzilu Imi Esabgodim. So the Gemara clarifies, Maishna Hocha, the Ketoni Lachem, so what's the difference in Hatzolos Mamon that in the Mishnah it says he could say to Achirim, Bo Vatzilu Lachem, in other words, save it for yourselves, and Hacha, the din in Begadim, it says, as opposed to Mazon, it says, Bo Vatzilu Imi, meaning you're taking it for me. So the Gemara answers, Amri, the Bnei Yeshiva answer, Gabe Mizonos, when we're talking about saving food, Ketoni, Bo Vatzilu Lachem, Mishum Deloka Chazu. In other words, they're not Roy for him on that Shabbos. What's he going to do with food beyond Shalosh Sudos? Ella Mazon Shalosh Sudos Bilvat. All he can do with is three sudas. Aval gabi levushim ktani. There it says imi mishum de kachazi le lekuliyoma. Theoretically, he could wear these begadim. They're worthy. They're suitable of wearing the whole day. He could take off these clothing, and then put on the other clothing. Therefore, he's allowed to say to achirim that they can save begadim on his behalf. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a brisa, a person wants to save begadim, and he wants to obviously save as many begadim as he possibly can, is lovesh umotzi. The brisa says that he's allowed to put on as many begadim as he can, go out, and then poshe, take them off, v'chozev lovesh, go back in and take more begadim umotzi, and then again take them out, poshe, go back, take it out and go back in and take more begadim, wear them. And he could do this many, many times. Afil kol yom kula, during the entire day. Divrei Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shmona Asar Kelim. The cap is 18 begadim, and 18 specific begadim. V'eluhen. And now the Bryce is going to list the 18 begadim. We had Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah, and we never got to down to brass tacks exactly what these 18 begadim are. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, don't get your hopes too high that we'll understand all of the 18 begadim. You know, some of them are, shall we say, sociological. But let's go through them. Eluhim Shmonasar Kalim. These are the 18 Kalim. Now, one thing we have to know is that the 18 garments are really a set of clothes, and each one has its own function. There's no overlap, no repeat. So people actually wore, back in the time of Rabbi Yossi, all these 18 garments at once. Now Rabbi Yossi is not coming lafuke, wearing and removing other types of clothing, but he requires that they be articles of clothing that would ordinarily be worn together. And in his time, the maximum number of different begadim that you'd wear together at one time was 18. So the first one on the list is Mikotren Unkoli Ufunda. Actually, these are the first three on the list. So the first one is an outer garment. Let's call it a coat or a cloak. The second one is an outer coat. In other words, apparently they would wear this unkeli, which was much wider, on top of their outer garment, on top of the cloak. So they had a cloak and then an outer garment. We might call it a raincoat or something. And funda is an outer belt. These were the money belts, probably. So it was a belt that was hollow. Sometimes they use it to put money inside, but obviously on Shabbos, he's not doing so. And this belt was worn on outer garments. However, the Rambam, in his Pirush HaMishnayos elsewhere, in Masechta Kelim, he learns this to be a kind of an undergarment. Now we have Kalbus, Shel Pishtan, V'chalok. So we have some sort of a linen garment. He says, based on Rashi, again, you have to translate the laws of Rashi, but it's a tight-fitting, vest-like garment. And it might, maybe it doesn't even have sleeves. Okay? And then he's got chaluk. Now, I'm not sure exactly how a chaluk is different than a maktoren. Let's just see if he comments on this. Just one second. He says the maktoren he identifies as me'il elyon. Okay, that's on top of his bekodim. And we get to the case of chaluk. Chaluk, he says, is ksones sha'al b'saro. So that's not like the Rambam. Of course, the Rambam identified the Rambam had already identified this kalbos as a chaluk al b'saro. So what's chaluk? But let's say if we assume the kalbos is some sort of a what did we say before? A vest. So now we're talking about something that goes underneath the vest, that's on his bosa, so that's called a chaluk. Then we have apiloyos. He translates it as a sadin shemisatif bo kulo, some sort of a kerchief, and he wraps his kerchief around his head. And then he has maforis, which is called a beged sha'otef bo es rosho. Okay, so I'm not sure the difference between apilios and maforis. The apilios maybe is not just covering his head, but covers his entire body, where the maforo specifically covers his head. Ushnei sfarkin. Okay, these are kinds of avnetim, some sort of bands, which apparently held up his, maybe you would call them suspenders. Ushnei min olim. Again, he has two shoes, one for his right foot and one for his left. Ushnei an pilios. He's got two socks. Ushnei pargod. He says, Mechnasayim ktsorim ha-magim ad berech. So these are shorts that come up to the, up until his knee. Chagor shebim mosnov. Right, so he has an inner belt in addition to the outer belt that goes around his pagodim. This is the inner belt for his me'il, the kovah shebarosho, the hat on his head, sudo shebitzavoro, and he has a scarf around his neck. Roshav tluyim lefonov lekaneach bo es piv v'einov. And this leads us to the second Mishnah on Daf Kuf Chof Amud Aleph. Again, continuing the laws of Hatzolah min Hadleika. And Rabbi Shimon ben Nanos Omer, the question here is, are you allowed to save kelim which have already taken fire? In other words, they're already aflame. Again, he's got to do this in a way that doesn't endanger his life. But porsin, or shel gidi al gabi shida, v'teva u'migdal shachar bahen, ochaz bahen sa'or. So he's allowed to cover his kelim that are on fire with the hide of a goat, which is very soft and moist. And what is he covering? He's covering a shida teva umigdal. All right, we'll just loosely translate that as a carriage, a trunk, or a closet. And he's covering them, according to Rav Shimon, with a kid's hide, meaning a young goat's hide, Rav Shimon ben Anas. Mipnei shehu mecharech. And he explains why this is permissible. If again, you know, the object hasn't taken fire, that's fine. You're just preventing the fire from damaging it. But how can we permit extinguishing the fire? And it seems like Rav Shimon ben Anas's logic is that the hide does not actually extinguish the fire. It just prevents the fire from spreading because it's something that's not flammable. It itself does not burn. And then the Mishnah allows you v'yosim mechitza b'chala kelim bein maleim bein reikonim b'shvil shelo tavar hadleika. So he's allowed to set up kelim as a kind of a mechitza, as a barrier, so that the fire would not spread. And it would seem that this might be, perhaps, some sort of a...
Hi.
Says here, Mutu lasos b'shabes mechitza bein ha'esh lebein ha'begodim shalotechos bahen. So we're allowing him to set up a partition, a mechitza, between the fire and the kelim. Bechol ha-kelim. And he's allowed to use even kelim shiz baku machmas ha'esh, even though some of these kelim will crack as a result of the fire, the heat of the fire. Bein maleim bein reikonim b'shvil shelo tavar adleika. So he may be causing kibui ha'esh by putting this kli, which is, let's say, full of water, because maybe what happens is the fire is going to cause the kli to break, and then the water is going to spill out and put out the fire, but it's mutter. Rabbi Yossi doesn't like this idea of putting up a mechitz in front of the esh. B'kli cheres chadoshim maleim mayim, if it's an earthenware and it's brand new, full of water, l'fisha ein yochel l'kabel sa'ur. In other words, it won't be able to withstand the heat of the fire because it's brand new. V'emis bakim, and there's no question that the water is going to spill out when it breaks. U'mechaben es hadleika, and Rabbi Yossi holds that gram kibui is osur on Shabbos. Om Rabbi Yehuda Merav, talis she'ochaz bo ha'ur mitzad echad. So you have a garment, and on one side it caught fire. Nosan alev mayim mitzad acher. You're allowed to put water on the other side of the garment in order to retain or contain the fire so it doesn't spread. And Tosis quotes the Rashbam that he can't put water on the beged itself because shrias mayim, that's called kibus, that's also b'shabbos, but rather he puts the water close to it. And it's close enough that the fire is not going to spread. V'im kavsa kavsa. And if the fire goes out, it goes out. He doesn't have to worry about that because Rav Yehuda Merav accepts the sheet of the Tanakhama of our Mishnah and gram kibui is mutter on Shabbos. Okay, that's number one. Now, we're talking about a case. She no sin is amayim v'bokum shadayin lo achzal bo ha'esh. Amayim yelchu me'atzmam l'bokum shekfar ochaz bo ha'esh. So the fire, the water itself, is going to move on its own volition, so to speak, to link up with the part of the kli that's already caught fire. And it's mutter dafka k'she'ein zev vaday shamayim yelchul sham. He doesn't know for sure that the water is going to travel there, and he doesn't have kavana, but rather once he puts the water on, that's what happened. The water went there, and on its own, it's not a psikresha. And even though Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda that Dov Shanim is kavin is osur, here in the case of Dleika, Rabbi Yehuda would agree it's mutter, And Tosus adds that it's a kibush she'eino tzarch lepchamim, and therefore it's a melach she'eino tzarich leguf. It's only also mirabbanan. Meisvei, the Gemara asks the following kash from a brisa, talis she'ochaz ba ha'ur. So if the talis caught fire on one side, poshta umiskasev ba, v'im kovsa kovsa. So that since the fire took hold on one side, he can unfold it and cover himself with it. Now, exactly what this does is he keeps the smolder from spreading through the folds. And although if the smolder continues to spread across the cloak, it'll reach the water-soaked part of the garment and it'll be extinguished, but the person is not directly extinguishing the fire. He didn't pour the water onto the fire, and the fire will be put out by the water, but the water reaches the fire, and that happens me'elov. That's called gram kibui. Now, v'chein sefer, so that's v'im kovsa kovsa, v'chein sefer Torah sha'achas bo'a or, so you have a Torah scroll that is taken fire, poshto, he can spread it out, unroll it, v'kori bo, he can read from it, v'im kova kova, and if the fire goes out, it goes out. Now, exactly what's going on here when it says poshed v'korobo v'im kova kova? He says, al yidei kach lo tispashed eish b'kulo, by opening up the scroll, the fire is not going to continue to burn throughout the entire book, because it spreads slowly. V'im kova kova. He doesn't have to worry about it isa kibui. Now, it seemed that he's only allowed to be poshed the talis shenechza ba ha'esh, that's mutim, they she'enu nosein shum dovra mechave. He's doing something that's gorem, that the esh shouldn't be mechave. And that was the case at the beginning of the brisa of talis she'ochaz ba ha'ur. But again, it would seem that's called a dovra gorem, that the esh lo tispashi, but to put mayim, to put water directly on the talis, then in a sense he knows for sure that's certain, without a shadow of a doubt, that it's going to put the fire out when it gets there. That's asur. And if that be the case, the Gemara is asking a kasha on Rav, because Rav says that he's allowed to put mayim mitzad echad. So here we turn to Daf Kuf Chaf Amid Beis, and the Gemara answers, Hu Diyoma, Rav holds that Gram Kibu is Mutter, and therefore he allows you to pour water on that talis that's already caught on fire. And even though it'll definitely put out the fire, but nevertheless, he holds like Rav Shim Ben Nanas in our Mishnah, who says, Mutter Lifros Or Gidi, we allow you to put this wet, moist hide of a goat on top of a teva, on top of a cabinet that's already burning, in order to prevent the fire from burning it. So the Gemara raises the following objection. Ema diomar Rav Shim ben Anas, when did Rav Shim ben Anas, under what conditions, allow you to be pores the or, to cover the teva with this skin? That's only neshu mecharech. That's because the or prevents the fire from traveling, and it sort of is a barrier before it. That's called gram kibui. No, I'm sorry. That's not even gram kibui. But gram kibui mi omar. You know, it's to pour water directly onto the talis, and when the water reaches the eish, it's going to put out the eish. Did Rav Shim ben Anas go that far? And the Gemara answers, in that far, Rav Shim ben Anas would allow to be mata even gram kibui midiktoni. And this we're going to be medayik from the sefer Rav Yossi Oser. Rav Yossi says to put up a machitza between the eish and the kli is asur, b'kli cheres kadosh meleim mayim, when you have these new earthenware kelim that are full of water, and the reason for it is she'enom yecholim l'kabel sa'or. We know for sure that this new, brand new earthenware is going to break because of the heat of the fire. Ve'em esbakim, and the mechaven esadleka. And that was Rav Yossi's chumrah, of Gram Kibbutz Michlal, we can imply from that, infer from this, that the Tanakhama Sovar, the Tanakhama in this case of Shimon Nanas, that he was Matir, Shori, Lahaniach Gam Kelim Chadoshim, even brand new Kelim, which are full of water, that we know they're going to crack and break because of the fire, and nevertheless, he holds Muta because Gram Kibui is Muta. So this is where we're going to stop for today. We're now on Daf Kuf Chaf Amid Beis, and we're up to Tanur Rabbanon, which is about 6 lines down from the top of the Yom.